WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
I'm going to kill you.
I know. If I don't kill you first.
The good guy and bad guy are both women in the 1954 film Johnny Guitar, which starred Joan Crawford and Mercedes McCambridge. Martin Scorsese loves this film, and it's one of four movies he's helped restore for his new home video series, Martin Scorsese Presents. Scorsese not only makes great movies, he's trying to ensure that great movies of the past continue to live. He's helped restore well-known and obscure films for theatrical and video release. His new Republic Pictures home video series includes Johnny Guitar, Force of Evil, Pursued, and A Double Life. Each video opens with an introduction by Scorsese. Scorsese is busy editing his new film Casino, but he was able to take a few minutes to talk with us about why he thought these films were worth restoring. Let's start with the film Scorsese says most influenced his work, the 1948 film noir Force of Evil, directed by Abraham Polanski. It's about two brothers' moral responsibility for each other. John Garfield is a lawyer for the numbers racket. There's a new fix that's going to knock out most of the small numbers banks. One of those banks is run by his estranged older brother. Garfield goes to warn his brother, but the brother is a decent man in spite of his affiliation with the rackets, and he wants nothing to do with the corrupt Garfield. Here's Thomas Gomez as the older brother Leo, turning down the advice offered by John Garfield.
I do my business honest and respectable.
Honest? Respectable? Don't you take the nickels and dimes and pennies from people who bet just like every other crook, big or little, in this racket? They call this racket policy because people bet their nickels on numbers instead of paying their weekly insurance premium. That's why policy. That's what it is and that's what it's called. And Tucker wants to make millions, you want to make thousands, and you do it for $35 a week. But it's all the same, all policy.
This is my secretary, my stenographer. My friend, Doris Lowry. She's been with me a long time. She's like a daughter to me. And you... I wanted to be the lawyer, and I could have been the lawyer if I threw you out of the house when our parents died. But no, I worked for you like a fool. For you. And I gave you everything.
Why do you talk this way to me in front of strangers?
She's no stranger to me. You're the stranger. And I'll tell the whole world because you're my brother. And I owe it to the whole world because you're my brother what you are. A crook, and a cheat, and a gangster.
Leo, be calm. Tuck will make you honest. Tuck will make you respectable. He's giving me $250,000 to create public sentiment, to make policy legal like Bingo Bango in the Irish sweepstakes. I'm paying you back, Leo. I'll make you rich with an office in Wall Street up in the clouds. Be calm, Leo. Be sensible.
All right. I am sensible. I am calm. I'll give you my answer calmly and sensibly, my final answer. My final answer is finally no. The answer is no. Absolutely and finally no. Finally and positively no. No, no, no!
I got to tell you, I saw Force of Evil the way I saw Citizen Kane, the way I saw Tales of Hoffman, and just I saw it on that television show called Million Dollar Movie. And it was shown at that time on New York television, Channel 9, twice a night. They showed the same film for 1 week, at 7:30 and at 9:30. And some of the films I saw were good, and some I wasn't interested in. But the ones that I liked, I was able then to... It's almost what they gave you by showing the film twice a night for a week, 7 days. What they gave you was a chance at, in a sense, without you realizing it, studying the picture. And so I would tune in for certain scenes that I liked or watch it several times and that sort of thing during the week. And Force of Evil was one of those pictures that did that to me. And I became... obsessed with the story, and for a number of personal reasons, I really liked the ideas of the brothers, and I liked the sense of the numbers rackets. I was very interested in all of that, but also in the nature of the language in the movie, the way it was written. And I think from that clip, you could tell that they, at first hand, it seems like naturalistic dialogue. But if you go a second time and you study it, or you take it a third time and you play it over and over again, or whatever, you know, however you want to do it, you begin to realize, I think, and some British critics have pointed out, one time they said it's written in blank verse. So I don't know. I can't tell blank verse from most other verse. So, but the point is that it is beautifully written. It reminds me of some of the dialogue, some of the best dialogue of, let's say, Clifford Odets or great American playwrights of the 30s and 40s and 20s.
You've said that this is the first film that applied to a world that you knew and saw.
Yes.
What was it about this film that made a connection to your life?
Well, I knew about the numbers rackets.
How'd you know about them?
Well, because people played in the street. I grew up with that. The biggest thing was somebody walking by and say, "What number hit today?"
Did your family play the numbers?
Oh, I don't know. People all around me played. I have no idea. I was about 8 years old, 9 years old, you know. But the numbers were very important. And apparently, at that time, there were the numbers in Manhattan, but they were different from the Brooklyn number. So, and it's still, to me, some mystical, these number rackets, which now have become lotto, I guess. they're still, to me, like some strange, mystical, and as kids, we would always wonder, how did they figure out what number came out? And they said, well, these people read the back of the newspaper, and there's some numbers in the racing columns. And to this day, I have no idea how it worked.
No, what about the sense of the moral responsibility that the brothers had for each other? Did you relate to that, too?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know I was really... I couldn't verbalize it at the time when I was watching the film. I may have been about 13 or when I saw the picture. But there was a sense of a powerful emotion between the people in the film and a sense of love and disappointment and responsibility to each other as family.
Leo, I arranged with Tucker for you to quit tonight. I'll pay off your investments.
I don't want it, Joe. The money I made in this rotten business is no good for me, Joe. I don't want it back. And Tucker's money is no good either.
The money has no moral opinions.
I find I have, Joe. I find I have. And now I'm speaking to you. I'm speaking to you as your older brother who slaved for you. You stop now. Stop now, Joe. Because I'm getting old and old people die. And there'll be nobody to cry for you.
A scene from Force of Evil. We'll talk more with Martin Scorsese about his new home video series. After a break, this is Fresh Air. Joining us by phone is Martin Scorsese. We're talking about the films he restored for his new video series, Martin Scorsese Presents. Another film that you've restored for this Republic series is A Double Life, which is a 1947 film directed by George Cukor.
Yeah.
About an actor who gets so involved in his roles that he becomes the character and he loses his grip on reality. I was wondering if that theme speaks to you as a director, and not only as a director, but as someone who's worked with such intense actors as Robert De Niro and Harvey Keitel, who seem to really go deep into themselves or deep someplace to get the performance they want.
Well, you answered your own question, yeah. I mean, to a certain extent, that's always interested me. And, you know, I find, I don't know any other way. I really didn't study any acting techniques or go to any acting courses of any kind. So, and I don't do anything special with the actors that I work with. I was just lucky over the years to have a kind of rapport with a number of people, especially De Niro and Keitel. And I don't know, we used to still try to do so, dig into ourselves and try to throw it up on the screen there, and I don't know whether, you know, in a lot of cases people seem to be interested, in other cases they're not. But all we're trying to do is deal with that kind of truth that we sense is the truth.
What's the most extreme you've seen an actor go to get into character? The biggest transformation you've seen with someone you've worked with?
Well, I would think De Niro in Raging Bull, in terms of his physically changing his body. There's no doubt. That was very extreme. And or like Keitel in The Bad Lieutenant, although I didn't shoot the picture. I don't know. It's a film I admire greatly. But to see what Harvey achieved with Alba Ferrara there, I know they had to go through something to get there.
Does a director have to get into character in a way also? What do you have to do to get into the right mood and the right frame of mind?
Stay with the characters all the time in your mind and stay that way day and night and live through it. And if it takes 2 years to make the picture, you live through it for 2 years every day and night. Simple.
You've restored also Johnny Guitar, which is one of my favorite films. I just love this film. It's 1954,
yeah.
A Western directed by Nicholas Ray, who also did Rebel Without a Cause.
Right.
Joan Crawford plays like the town bad girl who actually has more moral fiber than anyone else in the town. She's built a saloon, probably with money she's made as a prostitute in the past. Mercedes McCambridge is officially an upstanding citizen, but she's consumed by jealousy because the man she loves Joan Crawford. So McCambridge is just waiting for an excuse to try to kill Crawford, and soon she finds one. Meanwhile, Sterling Hayden, Crawford's ex, is back in town, and here they are talking about their past.
What right have you to judge?
I once loved you. A man takes a pride in something he really cares for. He hates to see it trampled.
A man can lie, steal, and even kill. But as long as he hangs on to his pride, he's still a man. All a woman has to do is slip once, and she's a tramp. It must be a great comfort to you to be a man.
It was more of a comfort to think that you were waiting for me.
Did you honestly believe after 5 years I'd be waiting for you?
Well, I had a long ride up here from Albuquerque. I had to think of something. But it was kind of nice to know that we'd be together again.
Well, that's very generous of you, Mr. Logan. Is that a proposal?
A man's got to stop somewhere. This seems as good a spot as any.
That's just about the most touching speech a woman ever listened to. I'm overwhelmed.
Well, that's one of my favorite scenes. At night?
Yeah.
With the use of music there.
Yeah.
The young music. And the use of music in Force of Evil, too, is extraordinary. You know. But no, Johnny Guitar is an extraordinary picture. I mean, it's like a sort of like an hallucination. I don't really think it's a Western. I don't know what it is. And there are many other critics over the years and critics today, I'm sure, who can talk much more intelligently about the film than I can. I just find it to be audacious, remarkable use of color, people playing things, in a sense, over the top and making it work, and kind of an allegory, I think, of the McCarthy period, you know, for the political angle there. But a film about hysteria, in a way. It's a hallucinogenic, hysterical quality to it.
When was the first time you saw this movie, and how has...
Oh, I saw it on its first release. I had no idea what was happening in it. I was about 10 years old. I wondered what was going on. And I remember some people who did like Westerns complaining about it because they said that's not a Western. And they're probably right. In that traditional Western vein, it is certainly a very different movie. But obviously something was being done in this picture that was not... something was being hidden in the film. In other words, you couldn't take it as a on the surface as a regular Western. They had used the studio and the story and the script and the actors and everything, and Nick Ray and whoever else worked on the film, to say something that they wanted to say that would normally not have been able to be made. And they kind of disguised it in this form. I think a lot of it had to do with the McCarthy period, the witch hunt aspects of it, and the sexual anxiety and the sexual passion.
Oh, let me just say something about the sexual passion here. I think it has a film that is so subtle and so sexy.
Yes.
There's a scene where Crawford and Hayden are hiding out at Scott Brady's.
Yeah, Scott, I know. That alone is pretty interesting.
Scott Brady is jealous of Crawford's apparent feelings for Johnny Guitar, played by Sterling Hayden. And Crawford has just changed into dry clothes.
Right.
And Hayden is buckling her gun belt.
Yeah, I know.
As the jealous Scott Brady watches, and there's something so intimate about the way Sterling Hayden buckles Joan Crawford's gun belt. It implies everything that has gone on between them.
I know.
So powerful.
It really is. It really is. And also the sexual repression of Mercedes McCambridge's character, all of that. The use of the black, the use of them wearing black, the vigilantes and the posse wearing black, as opposed to her wearing, I think, a white dress when they go into her saloon at the end to tear it down, the confrontation. That whole sequence is one of the most extraordinary in movies, really. It has a very formal design to it. It begins with her lighting the lamps, and they raise the lamp into the up above the place. It has a kind of a gas lamps, you know, and it ends with them shooting down the lamp and setting the saloon on fire.
That whole
sequence is quite something to study.
Would you say that this film influenced your work in any way?
I don't know. I don't think I. If it did, I'm more Force of Evil, a Double Life, because even though I love Westerns, you know, over the years I realized I come from Manhattan. So it's a little. I think one of the reasons I love them because I had asthma and I couldn't go anywhere, and they put me in a movie theater, and I saw these outdoors and color, beautiful horses and guys wearing great clothes and women and all that sort of stuff, and you know. And anyway, in my mind, it was more escapism than anything else, but something which I loved, and the legend of it made it so alive, those films. But Johnny Guitar, if it did influence me, it forced me to look at form and color when I began to realize what the film really, what it really was, what it really is. I use past tense because I keep thinking of the first time I saw it on its first release, and I was too young. I didn't understand. But later on, I began to realize there are certain elements in the film stylistic elements that you can get a lot said in a movie under a guise of something else. And it can work subconsciously on an audience. It doesn't have to be all up front.
The films that you've restored are by directors who worked within the studio system. Mm-hmm. Do you think you could have made films within the studio system? I know this is all hypothetical, but say you were making films 30, 40 years ago.
Well, I mean, that would have been my dream, but I come from this period of time, not then. And I'm sort of an animal, a product of this time, of America, the 50s and 60s and 70s. And there's no way I could have done that. I'm not that. They're very talented in that respect. And I don't mean to. I mean that they could actually do a musical one day, do a pirate picture the next day, do a Western the third day, and do a gangster picture on the fourth day, and a musical then. You know, I mean, I have to find other ways into this material, and I'm not a director of that nature. I just don't. I'm not able to do it. I would have a problem blocking. I would. I really have to be very, very, very interested in what the film is saying. And not that they weren't, but they were real pros. They did their job, and I never liked working. So, you know, like for me, I'm not working when I make these movies. Like they're like some sort of gift in a way, and I'm doing my own little picture here and there. But that's really a job, to go to work. That's very hard.
Martin Scorsese, his new video series, Martin Scorsese Presents, is on Republic Pictures Home Video. This is Fresh Air.